Hey, good day, everybody. Welcome to the Deal Scout. Josh here, fellow deal makers out there. If you're looking to buy stuff, right? Like you want to invest in companies, buy companies or commercial real estate. This is a show for you. This is a show all about deals with deal makers. On the show, I interview people to talk about deals gone wild, deals on deck, things to look for in a deal to get education. And I want you as an audience to reach out to our guests and do a deal together. On today's show, we're going to have a guy who is an expert in real estate investing and putting together teams and partnerships. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what are you up to?
Sure. This is my 35th year in the commercial real estate business. It's kind of scary. I got started at a very young age. In September, which is this week, will be 25 years of having my own firm of exclusively representing tenants, buyers, and investors. So many people have heard of a buyer's broker on the residential side, but they probably didn't know one existed on the commercial side. So when I started my own company, it was all about helping people put together a strategic plan and implementing that plan, helping people get something, not sell anything to anybody. So whether that's buying a building for their own use, for their company's use, or buying an investment property in any of 120 some markets that we've got experts around the world, that's really what our platform has been. And about 25 years ago, I started buying both on my own and in partnerships. And with all the speaking and teaching I've done over those 25 years around the country, I designed a couple courses for continuing education. I should tell our listeners, for realtors, and it went so well locally, I took it nationally, and then I expanded it to attorneys, accountants, financial planners, and other professionals in about 25 different areas of real estate. So not just real estate investment, but real estate market overviews and things of that nature. And today, we're probably in the biggest tsunami that we've ever seen in the 35 years that I've been doing this. And that means opportunities, good and bad. So why don't I kind of start off by talking about that, and then we can delve into some other things. With COVID, with the pandemic, the last 18 months, we've never experienced anything like this. So probably before our grandparents were born in the Depression or something is the only thing that I can even come close to, or during war periods, that something like this had happened. So every type of business model has changed, some good, some bad. A lot of businesses closed. A lot of people have lost jobs, homes. You know, a lot of terrible stuff going on, but also a lot of opportunities have been made. So there's four or five segments of the market that are doing phenomenal. And there's a couple segments of the market that have done very poorly and have challenged. And it really varies by market to market around the country. So for example, the office market in CBDs has really struggled, as a lot of people still haven't decided, are they going back to the office? Does the company force them to go back to the office? A lot of people I've heard are quitting if they're forced to go back to the office. So because of that, and especially in CBDs, a lot of space has suffered. We track space in every market in the country. In our market in Columbus, Ohio, where I am, for example, we have over 1 million square feet of sublease space out there. So companies that may used to be in 10,000 feet only have 5 now. So that's an opportunity for a company that wants to lease space at a very low rate. But for a landlord or an investor, that could be a huge problem, okay? I don't know if you're seeing that in Ocala, maybe a little smaller office market than ours, but in many markets around the country, Boston, for example, has got over 6 million square feet of sublease space. So huge, yeah, huge, thanks. So retail and office have probably been hit the hardest. A lot of people buy from Amazon. I have a 17-year-old son, and every other day it seems like a package is showing up at the door. I'm like, quit buying crap, would you? But he's not going to the store. He's buying it offline, online. So obviously, a lot of retailers that are brick and mortar have to change their strategy because of that. Sometimes people aren't even going out to eat because of COVID. They're having it delivered by DoorDash or whatever. So that's changed a lot of strategies. Drive-throughs have become more popular. Little place that I go to here, they closed the places that didn't have drive-throughs for people that wanted drive-through, which really astounded me that more people don't want to sit and relax and eat, neither want to just take it home or eat it on the road. So those two things starting off have really been the red flags. But let's talk about what's really gone gangbusters. Industrial logistics, storage that has to take all that retail and get it to people usually the next day or the same day has gone through the roof. The industrial market's probably as hot as any segment in the market, as is data storage centers, medical buildings, especially with all these sick people running around, self-storage, and apartments. So many of your investors are going to be looking at those five areas, and every one of them are probably as hot as they've ever been. Again, since I've been in the business for 35 years, I've never seen the demand. And one reason is foreign buyers have come back to the U.S. in a big time, and people that had their money on the sidelines that maybe don't want to have everything in the stock market are putting more money into real estate, either in partnerships, either in a REIT, or individually, which obviously we could dive into those. But that's kind of it in a nutshell, the good and the bad. And we can certainly spend a whole hour just going up, you know, through those things.
Yeah. Now this is great conversation. So what happened in the world with COVID starting in 2020, right? Really disrupted disrupted the world, but in real estate, commercial real estate, we see retail and office getting disrupted, even restaurants, but like drive-throughs are really skyrocketing, industrial logistics, storage, data storage, medical apartments, like these things are doing really good amongst the chaos. Where do you see let's just assume things get better. Do you think retail and office will come back, or do you think it's permanently disrupted?
Well, I think every employee that's a good employee now has choices, because we know, I don't want to get political, but because of these handouts, a lot of people didn't go back to work and just lived off the unemployment and the additional handouts. A lot of my small business clients, they're begging for good workers and they're paying very good salaries, bonuses. You can drive down my main road, $500 bonus, start today, $3 or $4 over what they're usually paying. Truck drivers making six-figure wages with zero education. So that's a very good question. I think office people are going to have their choices and they're going to want jobs with flexibility. And going downtown for some people, unless they live downtown, is hard. You pay to park, you got to commute, you're dressing up. A lot of people have been wearing shorts and a t-shirt for a year and a half, and I don't want to put a suit back on. I don't want to wear dress shoes anymore. But that ripple effect that has, the parking lot guy just lost out on that $10 a day. The shoe shine guy lost out. The local diner, lost out. The ripple effect of what that has on economies, and again, especially downtown, is huge. So I do think the people that have choices are going to start taking jobs with more flexibility, even tax structures. For example, where I live, the downtown city of Columbus lost tax dollars because people worked for over a year in their suburbs, and the suburbs got the tax dollars instead of the downtown entity. So you think that's not a big deal, but then you find out, oh, guess what? We don't have enough money for police and fire this year. We're running a deficit. So every community is dealing with issues that they have not dealt before. And again, that is going to mean opportunities for people, depending on their risk tolerance. And every time I talk about investment property, that's the first thing we usually talk about is risk tolerance. If one is very conservative and 10 is very risky, everybody's got their own. What's going to let you sleep at night and what's going to keep you up? And you may be an 8 and your wife may be a 4, or if you're in a partnership, you want to make damn sure that you're in with a group that has the same risk tolerance, or there's going to be a lot of issues. And I'll give you a perfect example. I had a group of 25 doctors I was working with once that was trying to decide whether to lease or buy an office building. Well, 8 of them were older, getting ready to retire, so they didn't want to buy. 8 of them were younger, had a ton of medical school debt, so they had no money. And the 8 in the middle all had tons of money and all wanted to buy. So it was a constant tug of war back and forth. And they could never make up their mind. 2 years later, still couldn't make up their mind, to do it. So I run into these situations all the time. But risk tolerance and knowing your risk tolerance, there's no right or wrong, good or bad. It's yours, what it is. And a lot of it will really stem from, how are you raised? Were your parents, risky or conservative? Did you grow up with money or not? If you didn't grow up with money, you're probably very conservative. My parents were divorced. I was raised by a single mom, 4 kids. My mom was a big worrier who grew up in the Depression. So our whole life was around save, 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 use coupons, don't ever spend. That was drilled in into my head for 6 years till I went to college. Never did I think I'd be in such a risky business and being on straight commission for 35 years and investing in some extremely risky things, you know, that I've done after that was gone into my head. But saying that, I'd still say I'm a more conservative person compared to some people that I know that are willing to take more risks. But again, if you grew up with a lot of money or your parents gave you a lot of money or you saw them taking different types of risks, your outlook might be a tremendous amount different. The other thing a lot of people don't think about is their exit strategy. How long do you want to be in an investment? And when do you want to get out? When do you need to get out? So for example, you may have young kids and you don't need the money for 15 years till they go to college. You want to use it for their college fund. So you may have a different outlook than somebody that wants to cash out. And so again, if you're doing a partnership, it's really important. And again, even it could be with your spouse or your best friend, you got to make sure you're on the same page for things like that. I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but those are two really crucial things. The risk and the exit strategy that unfortunately a lot of people don't bring on the table early with that, Josh.
Yeah. So you gave a great example. And now we're touching the topic of real estate partnerships and partnerships in general. Now you gave an example of the group of 25 doctors, right? Eight with no money in college debt, eight in the middle with tons of money and wants a long practice, and then eight or so on the top end ready to retire, don't want their money tied up in a building. They'd rather have the cash. What would be your advice if you designed a relationship and you walked them through that? How do you work through that, and what are some options that they could do?
I'm a big believer in the Stephen Covey theory of seek first to understand, then be understood. So what I'm doing is asking open-ended questions, and that's actually a great lead-in. We have a form on our website. We have a form on our website that's free. If you just go to shankcompany.com under Get Started and Contact for Investors, it's a who, what, why, when form. So I'll go over that form with them or email it before them to find out where have they been, where they are now, and where are they going. So for example, is this their first investment or have they done others alone or in partnerships? How much cash do they have to put down? How much cash are they comfortable putting into an investment? How much cash is the bank willing to lend them and or the partnership? And that's really crucial, having your financials together. And let me set that up a little better for you. Even. You need to have a team in place of trusted advisors. And this is true whether you're leasing an office space, buying a building for your company's use, or an investment property, whether a loan or in partnerships. So who are these trusted advisors you really need? And this is so crucial. Please write this down if you're listening. The first is a real estate attorney, not a general attorney. Somebody that's going to help you with the legal issues, because one word of a contract can be wrong and you could get screwed. And I've personally had that happen to me where a comma was missing on a 90-page document, one little comma that changed and cost me money, okay? You can't go cheap on your trusted advisor. You get the best for each assignment you're working on. The other is the commercial banker that specifies in the area of the type of property that you're purchasing. So for example, some bankers aren't gonna touch retail. Some don't know self-storage. A lot of the bankers, you assume they're an expert in the area. The reality is they're very generalist. So you have to make sure you're getting that lending funding from somebody that really knows, because they're going to ask an appraiser who, again, may or may not be an expert in that specific area to say what amount of a loan should be able to give you. The other one is an accountant that knows and understands real estate. And why is this important? There's things today like opportunity zones and 1031 exchanges and how you write off different legal write-offs that are crucial in a partnership or in an individual to protect your legal rights of writing things off. You've heard, everybody's heard, the top 5 or 10 people in the world, the 5 richest people, barely paid any taxes. Why? And this is genius. They have very good accountants that knows the tax laws inside and out. They don't take salaries. What they do is they get line of credit off their property, which you can legally write off. And they use that as their income. So most
That's
people
interesting.
The USA just had an article about it about a month or two ago. And it's amazing. I bring it to a bank and they're clueless about it. So again, if you don't have the right bank or the right accountant, they're not going to understand that. But a lot of people can bitch about our tax system, and a lot of people aren't paying taxes that should, for sure. But there are legal ways, and until those rules are changed, you want to make sure you have that person that can help you, obviously, save and recapture as much money as possible. Really, really important, you know, for that. So an attorney, an accountant, a banker, an insurance person, because you want to make sure your property is really covered. Imagine right now if you owned a building in New Orleans.
Oh my gosh.
How would that feel, right? Would you be scared shitless? So yeah. in most markets around the country, a year and a half ago, we had riots. We had buildings damaged. In our city, we had over 200 buildings where the glass was broke. Each pane of glass was over $1,000. I had a client that had a small little deli that her cash register stolen and two big windows broke, $5,000 of damage. And this woman, you know, was heartbroken. So you want to make sure you have the right insurance provisions and the right insurance agent that's going to help you for something like that. A financial planner, and then someone like myself that really is the quarterback of the process that helps put it all together. So you get that to really answer your question, the who, the what, the why, the when, and the where. Use our form to really go, what I say, from a shotgun approach to a rifle. Okay, you've got 300 grand cash to put down. The bank's willing to lend you $1 million. Again, whether it's yourself or a partnership, you want to hold the investment long-term, which usually means 5 to 7 years or more on there. And then you talk about what's an expected return. And that, again, is really going to vary by area of the country, property type, and the quality of the tenant, how long the tenant's lease is, and the quality of the investment property itself. Is it an A property in a great location, or is it something more risky in a different location? So we're looking at a tremendous amount of variables. They're going to tell you whether you're going to make a 3.5 cap or a 7 cap, for example. And it's all over the board today based off those factors we've been discussing.
Yeah. So when we talk about real estate partnerships, you gave one kind of like point on make sure the risk tolerance is aligned, right? So if I'm super risky and my partner is, you know, wants more conservative, we're always going to butt heads. We probably won't make any decisions. And if we do make a decision and it's wrong, it could, you know, it could hinder the relationships. What other things should you look for in a real estate partnership?
Well, Trust. And I would say, trust your gut feeling. So again, I've done a lot of business, both on myself and in partnerships. And I always try to educate people by the horror stories, not the success stories. I could beat my chest and say, I doubled my money on this deal. Cool. Let's talk about the things that didn't go good and why didn't they do good, and hopefully learning something so you don't repeat them. So I have one large group I've been investing with for about 22 years. We've had two deals go bad in those 22 years. Their track record has been phenomenal. It's made me a great deal of money. I thank God every day. Very blessed. I've invested, and I have a personal philosophy of, if you invest 20 to 50 cents of every dollar you make, you're going to be able to do whatever you want in your life. And I've been doing that for 25 years. Most people are not disciplined enough to do that, but I live simple so I can invest. So the places we've had issues is typically who manages the property. You have to vet the property manager so good. And a lot of individual investors will try to manage properties themselves when they have no expertise in that area and then end up shooting themselves in the foot. Excuse me. And they end up either losing money and or losing the property. And I've seen that on every property type in every situation in the 35 years that I've been in business. So I always tell people when I'm doing the seminars, if you take one thing away, don't ever manage a property yourself. Unless it's a single tenant, triple net, retail lease property, there's no way in hell you should be managing the properties. So we had two terrible instances One where the property manager absconded with funds, and we chased him and legally chased him for 3 years, spent $500,000 on legal fees, never got anything back. I think he took $8 million from us.
Wow.
Okay. So yeah, the main partner lost $5 million on that deal. Okay. And I lost six figures on that deal. I used to have a full head of hair when I got in this business. So that's hard to do when you grew up with no money, to lose that kind of money. But you have to alert people. And, you know, just like anything else, you could buy a stock that you think is a home run and all of a sudden something happened. Or you could have a house in New Orleans and today it's underwater, right? And you didn't have the right insurance and you're screwed. Or you could have been in Surfside in Florida in this beautiful retirement condo, and the next day it cratered on you. So there's risk in everything in life, but surrounding yourself with people you trust and having the best people for the most crucial roles. So if you have to rehab a property, you better have a damn good contractor that you trust. Because if he's 2 months late, or the material's late, or lumber goes up 400%, well, your profit just went out the window. And obviously that's what's happened this, you know, this past year. It costs so much to build anything new today. It's really hard to make money. So I buy value add apartments all over the country in this partnership, and we don't build hardly anything new because the way it's so hard to make money because of the rents you have to charge are so much higher, and there's so few tenants that can pay those rents. Mm-hmm. I'm a partnership in a strip center where five of our tenants closed the door during COVID, half our tenants. So fortunately, we were very conservative and had held a lot of cash back to be able to get through that. We let two tenants come in at one third of the rent just to get something in there until the market got better. Now we're going to kick two tenants out and bring in other tenants that can pay the full, you know, the full rent. So when you're going through these things, again, that gets back obviously to risk tolerance, but having the right people in place, the right leasing agent, the right property manager, the right real estate attorney, whatever your specific thing is, an engineer, for example. You've heard 1,000 articles on this Surfside condo collapse. Was the parking garage properly engineered? Okay, I'm not an engineer. I'd be homeless if I had to be an engineer. So I don't know the answer to that on there. But something obviously happened very bad. Were they cheap? Did they use inferior materials? You know, that happens in other countries. We hear of all the time, but you don't hear of that happening too much, you know, in the US. And obviously, one good thing the government does usually is make you get a permit and make you have an inspection to make sure those things are done, you know, correctly. But the horror stories that people need to watch out for is picking your partners correctly, trusting your partners. And if you're doing something outside of your comfort zone or different risk tolerance, like you mentioned, what you need to do is have your own separate attorney that's writing in language. I'll call it a buy-sell agreement. If you agree to disagree that, hey, I don't think we should invest another $100,000 in this property, we need to rehab it. And no, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable putting $100,000 into it, or that somebody died or got divorced, you need to have a way to get out if you want to get out. And again, because that's going to happen. All right. You could still be good friends, or, you know, people that you're trusting, or sometimes you're investing with people like I do that I don't know any of them, but the major partner. I don't know. There are maybe 200 people in one deal. I don't know any other. I don't care, as long as the property is performing. I could care less as who's in the deal, because you're working off a perspective that outlines what the risk is from day one. So let's dive in a little bit more of the pros and cons of individual versus partnerships. Individual, you're limited by how much cash you have and how much cash the bank or a private lender is willing to lend you. So even if you're a wealthy person or an accredited investor, and an accredited investor means someone that's probably making $200,000 a year for three consecutive years, or has a seven-figure net worth or a combination thereof, okay? So if you're an accredited investor, then you can usually get into most partnership deals, and most of those are a $50,000 or $100,000 minimum to get into. Most of them are long-term holds, meaning 5 to 7 years. Some are short-term fix and flip type things, which could be 12 to 18 months. But the majority that I've seen are longer term. So the individual, you have 100% control. You have 100% responsibility. So you have to pick that property manager. You have to pick that leasing agent. You have to pick that contractor to fix it up. You have to decide how much to improve the property, where to improve it, you know, and not over improve it, that sort of thing. So, you know, you take all the risk, you get all the reward, but you're limited on your own net worth and obviously your risk tolerance. Okay. So I come across a lot of wealthy, big ego people that won't delegate and they want to do everything themselves. Excuse me. And they may be great in their business, but they may not be great in real estate. And that's where the red flag is. There's too many people with the egos that you got to put your ego on the shelf and say, just because you know houses maybe, or you've had good luck selling a house is totally different than buying an apartment building or a retail center or industrial building or a self-storage property or a data center or a medical building. Totally different. So that's the biggest thing. The other thing is most of the smaller deals, you're competing with so many different people. Let's say you have 100 to 300,000 to invest. Most commercial deals, you have to put a minimum of 20% down. So on a $1 million deal, you're putting 200,000 plus costs down. So you may be competing against 1,000 other people in your market. Even in a small city like Ocala, you'll have a lot of people. If you had, say, a 25 unit apartment building, you're going to have 1,000 people looking at that because that's easier to understand. Or a small self-storage, you know, that's $500,000-$600,000. You're going to have so many people looking at that. Chances are you're not going to get a deal on it. You're going to have to actually pay a premium today because of the market conditions. We have record low interest rates, right? Mm-hmm. 40, yep. 50-year low interest rates. And to give that some perspective, when I got in the business, my first deal was at 17%.
Gosh.
Yeah. Now you can get a commercial deal under 4%. You can get a residential deal under 3%. So a lot different. So because of that, we have a shark feeding frenzy where everybody wants to get into business, wants to buy investment property, but it's hard. It's difficult for the individual. So that's why people get into partnerships. Some people try to just do it with friends, or you've heard of crowdfunding and things like that. But for example, my little suburb where I live in, if I wanted to go buy a fourplex or something, you're probably going to pay $100,000 more than it's worth. There's that much demand. Okay. So to me, that's stupid because you can't raise the rents enough. And then your taxes are going to go up, which most people fail to calculate when they buy and don't take that into thought. And what looked like on paper a good investment, and it may be a good quality, you know, brick, four unit apartment or whatever, you end up having to wait 20 years to make money on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the real pro for the partnership is you get into bigger deals that there's probably less competition, even though there's now still more competition than there's ever been before. There's less competition than the $1 million and under deals that 90% of individual investors are looking at.
So less competition. And what about margin on bigger deals? Is there a bigger margin?
Again, that's going to really vary by property type and area of country. I mean, it's all over the place. And again, the investment market overall is very, very strong. If you wanted to buy an office building today in the CBDs, you could probably get a higher cap rate. But again, you're probably taking more risks. You may have more vacant space or companies that still haven't determined what they're going to do and try to get out of their lease. You know, that sort of thing. So you can't get greedy. And I don't like to ever quote a return because it does vary so much. Florida is different than California, is different than Texas, different than New York, is different than Ohio. So you could be very, very 3 or 4 point different extreme based on the quality of the tenant, the length of term of the leases, the quality of the product and the location, as well as the product type. So all those five factors are going to vary, vary greatly on that. So the REITs, the big, huge real estate investment trust, they're buying huge property and they're paying cash. So they know that they have a long-term outlook and they're competing with other REITs. So they may be buying 50 million and up properties. So the sweet spot usually is the $5 to $40 million properties that are too big for individual investors. And that's why partnerships get in it. The smaller partnerships are buying the, you know, 3 to 10 million and the bigger ones are buying the 10 to 40 million ones. So the group I've got, been buying with for most of my career are buying $30 to $40 million properties. We're putting $8 to $10 million down. So they're raising $8 to $10 million from investors putting $100,000 to $500,000 a pop into each one, and realizing that these are 5 to 7 year investments. We held one for 15 years. So one was doing so good. One, we got an offer after 18 months and we sold it in 18 months, even though our plan was to hold it long because we got such an incredible offer. So you always keep your eyes and ears open. And if somebody gives you a stupid, money, which some people will call it, if somebody came up to you in your house and said, look, I'll give you $200,000 more than you paid for it, you might say, I'm not selling, but today I will, because you're giving me $200,000. And that's the kind of things that are happening out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with partnerships, you mentioned a deal where you've had two deals gone south, right? Through partnerships, but everything else has been great wins. And you've been doing this for 25 years. Looking back at that deal where the person took off and ran with some money, if you had the ability to travel back in time and put something in place to prevent that, what would you have done different?
Well, we did, actually. And our general partner is so smart. He's a genius. He really is a genius guy. We now make the property manager put $500,000 in every deal. So they're aligned. Their goals are aligned with ours. Hmm. So if we make money, they make money.
Yeah, that's smart. Okay. So what does a perfect deal look like for you, right? So I'm out, doing 500 interviews on the Deal Scout. We're talking with real estate investors and people all over the, all over the globe. And I come across a good deal. What kind of deal are you looking for right now?
Well, personally, for me, my main point that I've invested in is value add apartments. That means 20 to 35 year old apartments, usually brick, good bones, as we call them, in decent neighborhoods, not new builds, because new builds are too construction, too high priced and much lower returns and too high rents. We want for the normal person. Everybody needs a place to live, right? So if you could get mobile home parks, that's the lowest common denominator for out of work people, minimum wage people and that, but it's very hard to get a property mobile home park zoned. There was one guy in Chicago that was the king of them that owned, hundreds of them. But personally, and what a lot of my clients want, are no headaches. And most apartments, if managed well, are not many headaches, okay? A triple net building, which could be anything from a drugstore to a bank to an auto parts store that's single tenant on a long-term 10 to 20 year lease, is the less headaches. As long as the company stays, like a dollar store right now is pretty popular for that sort of thing on that. And that's in every market. And that really takes no management. You just collecting a check every year on something like that. But the more intensive management ones, like an office building, a multi-tenant office building, can be very complicated, or a mixed use building that has retail on the first floor, office or apartments, condos on the second floor, or even a hotel combination. Those are a lot more complicated, where you may have two or three different leasing agents and two or three different property managers even on something like that. But the demand for apartments and housing is at an all-time high. Like our population is supposed to grow 1 million in the next 20 years, and they're taking every little side piece of ground and bulldozing it and building. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would not believe, like, they tore down my old health club to put apartments up.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's just how high the demand is, for housing. So most people know housing the best, so that's what they're comfortable getting into. My first deal ever I did was a self-storage deal, and I follow a guy on Twitter who's making incredible amounts of money buying mom and pop self-storage. So there's a lot of opportunities out there for your listeners for mom and pop operations that haven't been well managed. No matter what the product type is, it could be a small 4-unit apartment, a 4-unit strip center, got a convenience store, maybe a gas station or a bank in it or something, that the people are out of town. They're old, they're died, they got divorced. There's a lot of opportunity to pick up those kind of properties, whether it's, again, alone or in a partnership.
Yeah. So as you're looking through your own deal criteria, you also help other investors kind of come up with the plan, the exit strategy, you kind of work through and help massage deals. Like, what's your favorite aspect of a deal?
Well, obviously closing it. Sometimes it takes a year. Sometimes it takes a year. I mean,
yeah.
My business is a very long cycle, getting to know the person, trusting the person, them trusting you, getting the strategic plan together, getting them set together with all their trusted advisors, making sure they have what they have. For example, let's say you were going to pull a trigger on a property and you had all your money in the stock market and the stock market crashed and all of a sudden you don't have those funds anymore. You can't borrow those funds, from somewhere. So the deal dies. I mean, it can happen a variety, of ways. So I like helping people get what they want. When somebody has said, look, Greg's helped me made a lot of money. And, you can look on my LinkedIn and, I've been fortunate to win every award you can win in business. You do that from results. You do that from doing what you tell people you're going to do. I mean, I can't say I'm going to promise you a 7 cap on this deal. I'd be lying through my teeth. I can never promise that. What I'm going to promise you is I'm going to give you, for that market segment, for that property type, for that time period, what the range is, and try to get you the best opportunity that fits your goals with your risk tolerance and your exit strategy.
Got it. Now, where do you typically help on deals? Is it geographically driven, like you're north?
No, all over the country. So that's a very good question. So I was with the biggest company in the country for 9 years, CB, it's called CBRE now.
Yep.
And in 1995, I did the largest deal in the state of Ohio. The bank was Bank One then, now it's Chase Bank, which you know. And I helped them do a large project here. And that gave me the wherewithal to start my own firm. And I never thought I'd leave my old company. Never in a million years did I think I'd leave. My father was with the insurance company for 38 years. And I thought I'd do the same thing. But I didn't want to sell anything to anybody. I wanted to help people get what they wanted. So we had a group called a tenant rep group that did tenant, buyer, and investor things. And about 9 of us all left the company around the country at the same time. We had a tenant advisory service group of 45 people around the country. So we were like-minded individuals that were entrepreneurs that couldn't put up with the bureaucracy or the bullshit. And we all started our own firm. So we're all about 25 years in on our own. So I have an expert in virtually every market, about 82 or 3 US markets and about 120 markets around the country. To give a client, if you said, Greg, I want to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, Toledo, Ohio, Tucson, Arizona, no matter what it is, I need an office expert. I need a retail expert. I need an apartment expert. I need a self-storage expert. I need an industrial expert. So I've got those people that know that market the way I know my market. So I'm the quarterback. I help them through the process. I connect them with the right people. Again, the attorney, the accountant, the banker, the right real estate person. And I'm overseeing the whole thing, whether it's a small project or a large project, whether it's a user for an office user or an investor. On there, or putting people together. So I'll have different people. Again, this guy's got 50 grand. This guy's got 500 grand. This guy only wants office properties. This guy will do any kind of property as long as he's getting a specific return. Everybody's different on that. So I've got a data bank that tracks all that. And then we'll connect people together when they say, yes, I'm open to a partnership, or no, I only want to do this myself, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Now, what's your exit strategy? Like what are you doing? You've been investing 20 to 35% of your every dollar that comes across. So you've been investing for a long time. You probably built a cool portfolio. Like what's the end look like for you, right? Like,
I'll never stop investing in real estate because it gives you passive income. Real estate, here's why it's so great. You make money in the investment and on the investment. So what does that mean? The property will grow and appreciate in value. And again, today, when you look at how much something costs to build, if you can buy something under replacement cost or well under replacement cost, and you're okay with that risk, it's pretty tough to lose. So you look at an apartment. I mean, one in Denver just sold for $366,000 a unit. Well, how much would it cost you to build it? I mean, we've got some we bought for $40,000 a unit.
Wow.
So yeah, it's obviously, and again, it differs by every market. It differs by the rent they can charge. I've got a friend that does what I do out in California, and his price per units are 3 and 4 times what mine are, but they're charging 3 times the rent probably. Okay. So I don't see myself ever stop because I'm not managing any of them. I get a quarterly dividend check. So I travel all over the world. I told you, I drove down there to Florida in June, went to 7 or 8, you know, different cities. So my goal is to explore the world, and I use my real estate income that I get to do that. And then if my son wants to get in the business, teach him more, you know, of that. But I have more money in the stock market, but I'm more comfortable with my money in my real estate. I don't think the swing will happen in real estate the way it does with stocks, even though I have, you know, not too many risky stocks on there. My apartment buildings are never going to drop 20% in value. They may drop 5% in value, but they're never going to drop 20% in value. The only negative would be, again, a storm hits like in New Orleans, something like that, fire, you know, that, or somebody absconds, fraud, you know, that today, even cybersecurity, you got to be careful from. I mean, big companies like what? Target and all these other ones got hacked by cyber. So certainly that's something you have to look at, and that gets back to your insurance with, you're tied in with an expert that's going to hopefully protect you on there. But personally, I don't see myself ever stop investing. So I'm working less. I'm enjoying life more after working 60 plus hours a week for 30 plus years. You know, I've cut my work way back on it. And I can do it because I've got the real estate income coming in. So my goal is to be able to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. Total control of your time, to me, is that. There's plenty of people that have a heck of a lot more money than I do, but they're still slaving away 60 hours a week. They're tied. They have to be there. And that's the joy and the real benefit for your listeners of investing in real estate. If you do it smart, right, you put your ego in the shelf. We know that material things don't bring happiness. So rather than having a million to $2 million house, live in a $400,000 house and take that extra 600 grand and put it in apartments and see your passive income grow like crazy. And that's what I did.
That's cool. So as we're talking, what questions should I have asked you that I didn't ask you?
Well, when to start?
When should you start real estate investing, right?
Okay. And I'm going to say you start as early as you can. I tell my young students, so I teach high school kids, college kids. I, you know, do courses for every level. When you get out of school, hopefully you don't have too much student debt. You get a roommate, you buy a house and get three roommates, an Airbnb it if you don't have the roommates. Then you buy a duplex, live in a half, rent out the other half. Then you buy a fourplex, live in one, rent out the other three, and keep duplicating the process. Okay. And again, that gets back to risk, that gets back to management, that gets back to organization skills. But especially with money being cheap. And again, it's the cheapest it ever was. When I bought my first place to live in, I was 28, the loan was 9%. Okay, so now you can get a 15-year at 177. Again, that's like stealing money. It's so cheap on there. So get in as quick as you can get in. Partner, make sure you vet your partners and you trust. And again, hopefully have the right risk strategy. But today, I mean, Airbnb and VRBO and renting out rooms, traveling nurses, things of this nature. I mean, if you're comfortable, you get a 4-bedroom house and you rent out the other 3 bedrooms. Yeah, there's going to be a little disruption, but watch your net worth grow. Right? I've got somebody that's doing fix and flips in the hood and making $150,000 a year at a very young age. Okay? I'm not handy. I've never been handy. If I had to do that again, I'd be starving. Nor would have I been comfortable doing it. Yeah. But there's so many niches out there to do it. So the thing is to get started. Be organized. Be disciplined. Pay yourself first. And get into it as soon as you can, and then keep duplicating the process. Cool. Surround yourself with a team. Again, those trusted advisors, even at a young age. I've been with the same accountant for 30-some years. Crucial, important. I've got an attorney that when I need them, I know I can trust them, okay? Because you can't be everything. You can't know everything about everything. So you got to surround yourself with those things. The same thing with the contractor and the architect, again. If you're handy, okay, you're going to solve some of the things, but what about the floor load? You know, things like that. Or how's the roof? Or how's the HVAC? Or how's the parking lot? Or how's the drainage? How's the flooding, the flood issue? You know, things like that that can just knock you on the side of the head and cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, completely. So for for people out there who are exploring real estate investing, they want to learn, they're looking at a deal and they would like you to, you know, take a look at it, maybe get involved in it. Where can people go to connect with you and do a deal with you?
Okay. So I do one-on-one coaching. I have people fly to my house and stay with me. I do it by phone. Then go to my website, schenkcompany.com, S-C-H-E-N-K company.com. They can connect with me on LinkedIn, Greg Schenk, S-C-H-E-N-K, Twitter, at TenantRep1, T-E-N-A-N-T-R-E-P-1, on there. Again, using our forum on our website under Get Started and Contact for Investors. It's the who, what, why, when, and where. Take your time. I tell people, I don't care if you take 6 months to get all your stuff together. Get your tax returns together. Again, if it's just you, you and your spouse, a partner, get your most up-to-date returns, get a financial statement to really give yourself a baseline of where you are today. Okay, I've got this amount of money I have, this amount of money I'm comfortable investing. This is what the bank is willing to loan me. And then we can really get to work.
Very cool. All right. So ladies and gentlemen, listening in this conversation with Greg, I hope you learned a lot. I hope this was entertaining and educational, right? I hope that you reach out to our guests and say, thank you for being on the show and reach out to them and find a way to do a deal, right? We're going to be doing 500 of these interviews by August of next year. So we're really pumping out a lot of great content. Yeah, we're hustling there, Greg. Because what we want to do is create a really strong network of deal makers and investors and people who like this kind of work. So if you have a deal out there or are looking for a deal, head on over to thedealscout.com, fill out a quick form, get in touch with us, maybe come on the show and talk about your deal. Till then, talk to you all on the next episode. See you, everybody.